Hello and welcome to La Pausa Pod. This week we'll be inviting you into Stats Corner as always, and then we'll put Real Sociedad's apparent late season collapse under the microscope. It is being explained as a late season collapse, but we wanted to put that to the test. And in the middle of all that, we're going to take a quick look back at the second division's biggest games of the weekend and the state of play there. Jamie is with me as always, and I suppose we might as well kick things off with the first of three stats that caught our eye recently from Spanish football.
Yeah, so the first one, this was a really nice one where Savio is obviously having a great season, and I wanted to try and put his achievements into some sort of context, and I was looking up who was the last guy of his age to do what he's done this season in terms of goals and assists, and his 15 combined goals and assists this season are the most by a teenager in a single campaign since Sergio Aguero for Atletico Madrid in 2007-08. So, yeah, a lot of the times you look up something like that and it's some random player from Malaga that you forgot about 4 years ago. But, yeah, Savio's in pretty fine company, as we can see from that.
It would take another couple of years for Aguero to eventually make it to Man City, where he had a glittering career. Savio, based on what we've heard, is going to move to Manchester City next summer. So he'll probably be hoping that he can replicate what he's done this season with Girona. And he was excellent again at the weekend. I thought he probably should have had a penalty. Ended up getting his goal in the end. But he went through a period of probably just so-so performances, but he's just back now and looking as strong as ever. And he continues to separate himself from a pretty talented group of players at Girona this season.
Yeah, he was he almost scored a brilliant goal just before. He did score against Osasuna at the weekend, and I just love the fact that He's a danger so deep into games every single week. It's almost like he comes alive in the last half hour of games, whereas, you know, certain 1v1 wingers are probably running low on energy and inspiration by that point, but he just seems to accelerate into games. And the moment he sees his space late on, once the opposition start to step on a bit, it's just like he gets to work and does even more damage. So, incredible from Savio. If you look at his season overall, and yeah, he's not quite finished yet, so we'll see how close he can get to that Aguero total by the end, which was, to be fair, 10 more than Savio is on currently. But obviously Savio is Aguero was an out and out striker at that point, so not entirely a fair comparison.
And Girona looked to have closed in on that top four spot. It's going to be amazing seeing them in the Champions League, as we think that they will. So the second one is on Álvaro Baez's top spot as La Liga's best shot stopper of 2023-24. It's now under threat from Giorgio Mamardashvili of Valencia. He has prevented the second most goals of any goalkeeper in La Liga this season, +7. And only that's only behind Álvaro Baez of Las Palmas, I was going to say friend of the pod, a fan favorite of the pod. So, yeah, another fine performance from Mamardashvili against Getafe. He's still very young and presumably a lot of development still to come.
Yeah, and it's the stat is relevant in itself because I'm sure people remember not so long ago, Álvaro Baez was out in first place by a massive margin on this one, and he's had a little bit of a drop off in the time since, but Mamardashvili has been rock solid behind him, and now he's, as you say, they're only separated by one goal on this particular metric, which looks at shot stopping performance. So the fact that he's cut that gap to Baez, who is having an unbelievable season for the most part and still is seriously impressive. And it was just this week, actually, that I've seen, well, Diario AS have reported that Valencia have a pre-contract agreement with Dmitrievski from Rayo Vallecano, which you don't have to be a genius to work out that Mamardashvili is probably a high-risk, at risk of leaving Valencia this summer. And yeah, watching him this season, even though he's got work to do with his distribution, his shot stopping, the frame that he's got, the agility for such a big guy, he's got to be one of the biggest goalkeeping prospects in Europe, I'd say, at present.
Definitely, yeah. And another player just to mention, I'd add Hugo Duro, who now has 12 goals this season, a lovely finish against Getafe to give them all 3 points. I said on the pod last week how Valencia won't finish in the European places, thinking that they were going to fall off. But they are pushing right up there now, and it would be, as they say in Spain, an authentic miracle if they can make it into Europe, because we had them written off as relegation fodder at the start of the season. And after that performance against Real Madrid, to go and back it up then and beat Getafe, it's just simply incredible. So yeah, Hugo Duro with a fine finish. I don't think anyone would have had him on double-digit goals. And again, just like Savio, he's not done yet.
Well, the last one we've got for this week is following Atletico's disastrous result away at Cadiz. They've won 73% of their points in home games this season, which is the highest percentage in the Diego Simeone era. Obviously, a combination of two things, in that they are unbelievable at home and probably, I was going to say bottom half level away from home, but it's not quite that bad. But yeah, they are very average away from home, culminating in just an awful defeat away to Cadiz the weekend, a team who hadn't won and kept a clean sheet since the first day of the season, I think it was. So yeah, probably thinking about the Champions League game to come this week, but even then, it's just an inexcusable performance and continues just a real, really bad run away from home.
We spoke last week again about their defence, and Gabriel Paulista here was so weak for that first goal. And I spoke about them having to reinvent their whole back line and possibly having to reinvent themselves this summer. But and I'm not sure which side of Atletico Madrid that they're showing is the actual real one, because the home form, you would hope for them that it's that's who they really are. But that away form really is, it's so concerning. And against Inter then, the first leg, they got a bit of a baño, as they say in Spain, a bit of a bat, and they play Inter, who are seemingly flying. I don't claim to watch much Italian football, but Inter are flying, and they're going to have to turn that game around now. And like you said, they're probably had their eye on that tie, but at the same time, they need to be seriously looking over their shoulder at Athletic Club, because the run in now, Atletico play Barcelona next, which could, it's pretty much a pivotal week for Atletico Madrid in their season, and it could go a long way to deciding how we view them this year.
Yeah, definitely. And they're probably a team that we should dedicate a pod to, really. We probably will on the other side of those matches, because to try and figure out especially why they're so bad away from home would take a lot more time than we have in this particular segment. But again, yeah, there's huge games coming up for Atletico Madrid, and to come off it, or off a defeat away to Cadiz, a team who were have been absolutely awful for the majority of the season, it's an awful spot to be in. And you listen to Simeone after these games, and he doesn't really offer any explanation as to why this tends to happen away from home. He kind of just pins it on himself and says the coach is not preparing the team well. Very vague statements, obviously protecting his players, but again, he doesn't help us out too much in trying to figure out what's going on away from home. So we'll try and dig into that ourselves fairly soon.
Yeah, I was listening to the Spanish football podcast, and Sid Lowe was basically saying how, is that a slightly veiled dig at the players, in that he's saying, I keep preparing them in this way and it's not working. In other words, I'm not doing anything different and I'm the coach. So it's the players who need to take a look at themselves. probably just kind of inverting it a little bit, and possibly that's it, but it definitely is inexplicable. And like they were saying on that podcast as well, and I completely agree, is that there doesn't seem to be a pattern to it. It's not like they're doing anything and massively different, but yeah, we'll have to kind of maybe dig into that a little bit further and try to see if there is any kind of a pattern that we can read into.
I was going to say I've got some theories, but I'll keep them for next week. We just don't have time this week.
Yeah, let's have a dive in after this pod, and we can chat about that next week. And well, depending on if they beat Inter, they beat Barcelona, none of that's going to matter really, and we'll all be singing Simeone's praises and how good they are. But yeah, those two games are at home, luckily for them. So they have every chance of winning both of those games. So moving on to our spotlight on the Segunda, we've been paying a little bit closer attention to the Segunda in recent weeks, just because it is so tight at the top. There is basically 10 points separating teams 11, or 9 points separating teams 11 all the way through up to Leganés sitting at the top. And each and every, you could make a case for each and every one of those. Let's relax here. Probably from Oviedo, Sporting, Racing Santander in ninth up to the top, you could make a case for any of these teams finishing first, second, or then obviously in the promotion playoffs. So yeah, we've just been kind of keeping an eye on the bigger games. I went to Leganés last week and had a look at that, and I was watching Eibar and Burgos this week. Yeah, so the big results of the weekend were that Burgos bet Eibar, and I was really impressed with Eibar against Leganés. Then Burgos went out and beat them. Really impressed with Anderson Arroyo playing at right back for Burgos, and I was really impressed with how well coached they were. Basically, the whole goal of their setup was block off the middle, stop Mateus Pereira and Pero Nolasquain getting the ball in dangerous areas, which they did quite well. But Pero Nolasquain, again, he's just a machine. 19 duels in that game, and he's just non-stop. And I don't think, even if Eibar don't get promoted this season, I don't think he's going to be playing in Segunda next season. He's only been there since January, but he's been just excellent in the last two games that I've seen him. So yeah, and Real Oviedo getting a big win against Albacete. Watched that as well. And yeah, just really impressed with them in terms of how balanced they look. They've got Colombato in midfield, looks like a really balanced midfielder. Cazorla just slightly ahead of him, and obviously doesn't do much of the heavy lifting in terms of tracking and running. But they do cover for him quite well, and he plays in a kind of number 10 role, but then in deeper possessions, in a 4-4-2 kind of left midfield, he drops in. So yeah, Leganés then got a big win last night against Amore Bieta on Monday night. They got a man sent off, but they won 1-0, and they are unconvincing leaders, I'd say, because most of the people that I talk to who follow the Spanish Segunda aren't entirely convinced in them, but they just got a really good start, and yeah, they're the team to catch at the moment. So it's Leganés, Elche, Espanyol, Eibar, and Valladolid, and then Burgos with Oviedo in seventh. The other big news is that Espanyol have sacked their coach and Zaragoza have sacked their coach, and they play each other this weekend. Jamie's prediction of Zaragoza being promoted directly earlier on the season is looking a bit ridiculous. No, in fairness, I was right there with you. I can't leave you hanging here on that. I was right there with you thinking after they won their first like five games or whatever, I was like, yeah, this is it. And they had a big summer. It was the talk of the Spanish Segunda this summer that Real Zaragoza put together, and yeah, it's just completely fallen apart. They have now sacked two coaches and are on to their third, and they are not safe from relegation either.
Yeah, classic Segunda, really. You looked at them in the first half of the season and thought they had all the pieces to be able to mount a promotion push. Manager as well, Fran Escribar, experience at the top level, certainly a good enough Segunda coach in reputation. Somehow falls apart. I think the expectation on Zaragoza is what kills them most of the time. They're a you know, a team that are desperate to get back, and that anxiety tends to build a lot quicker there than it does in other teams. But you look across the league as well, there's other guys that we loved last season. Edis Arabia, Ruben Alves, Albacete and Andorra, who were both trying merely to stay in the league last season when at least I fully expected that both of them would be in contention for Primera jobs last summer. It's perplexing, really, how quickly things can change in Segunda. But I guess that's why people love it, and we try to keep an eye on it as much as possible.
And I think that's one of the things I think about when I watch Eibar. Quality and their talent isn't in question. It's just whether or not they're able to create enough chances without committing too many bodies forward that they're completely vulnerable on the break. So you see that with Andorra, quality isn't in question. Their style of play isn't in question, but that's not always necessarily the best way to play it. So just before we jumped on the pod here, Jamie said to me, "Oh, I've got some breaking news. I'm going to break on the podcast." And I was like, "Go on, tell me." He said, "No, I'll tell you on the pod." And I was wondering what it was. I thought it was going to be some Segunda news. Maybe I had in my head Paco Gemez is going to manage Espanyol or something. I was like excited because, but I just got a message and I just glanced over at my phone here and I saw, I think I know what it is. So do you want to break that news to us here, Jamie?
Well, yeah, I'll just say two words, Rafa Benitez.
Yeah.
And I think you'll know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah. He shouldn't be laughing. I mean, the man's just lost his job. So I guess all I saw on the message is Rafa and a wavy hand. So I'm guessing that means that Rafa Benitez has been sacked by Celta Vigo, yeah?
Yeah, it does. Unfortunately for Rafa. I don't really know. My first perception, so near to the fact that I'm not really sure what to think yet, but it's true that Rafa came in as a real project that Sevilla wanted to get behind and thought that he was a quality of manager that could spark something, a different profile of manager that they've gone for in the past, where it was usually a younger guy with a more attacking philosophy. But again, it's just felt like for months now, it's not been a project. It's basically, can Benitez keep himself alive to give him chance of getting to the summer and then restarting the project, which has never really begun in the first place. So yeah, it's not the biggest shock in the world, I don't think.
No, it's not, in fairness. And I wrote about him on The Analyst at the, earlier on the season. I was saying how, look, the stats are slightly... Or sorry, the results aren't really backing up what the stats are saying, but then at the same time, the results just never turned, and they've taken some beatings. They just were beaten 4-0 by Real Madrid, and obviously this news is just after happening, so we haven't really had a chance to think about this. But at the same time, there was a couple of times during the season where you would send me their lineup before the game and you're just like, this is completely uninspiring here, the lineup. So in fairness to Rafa, it was a project, but he wasn't really given much of a squad to work with. They signed a couple of players, Jonathan Bamba, Mingueza, who's been decent. But overall, it's just a squad lacking in quality. And obviously, Celta Vigo are making this move now because they feel like relegation is a very, very real possibility when I would imagine the objective was top half finished 10th, 9th, and that's just obviously not going to happen. Cadiz beating Atletico probably doomed Rafa more than Real Madrid's victory over them. So that relegation fight down at the bottom of the table is really messy now at the moment. You've got Rayo down there who are sinking like a stone, Celta Vigo, and then Cadiz. You would assume Almeria's still fighting it out. They earned a 2-2 draw against Sevilla last night. Granada competitor.
by the way, sorry, I should just say it's not been confirmed yet, but I have seen rumors this morning that Gaz Garitano is about to be sacked as well. So
what would be the point in that?
Lots of change today, and the guy they mentioned to come in was Pepe Mel. So that is I don't know what you'd call that anymore. Is that damage limitation, or is that we just want a guy who can look after us for a few games while they, you know, sort of kill time on the way to relegation.
Yeah, I think that's the old cliche, rearranging the chairs on the Titanic. So there's that. Granada, competitive against Real Sociedad, who we're going to dive into now. We might as well we'll shelve the managerial merry-go-round talk for the moment and just chat about Alguacil's Real Sociedad, who've just been eliminated from the Champions League by PSG and got over the line against Granada, having trailed 2-1. They won that game 3-2, and just in general, the vibes around Real Sociedad at the moment aren't very good, despite the fact that, as we'll explain here, their stats aren't that different from earlier on in the season. So the first question is, how do you feel about their season so far? Underperformance, on par, or better than you would have expected?
For me, I struggle to go anything more harsher than par, to be honest. I don't see it as a massive underperformance or a disappointment so far. I don't think that much further back in the league from what I would expect. If you look at their record after 28 games in each of their seasons under Alguacil, which is where we're at now, the points difference is basically a couple of wins. I think their average across the first four seasons at this stage is basically only like 3 points more than they're at now. And when you consider the fact that they've been in the Champions League, they've been in Copa del Rey semi-final as well, they've accumulated a lot of fatigue and extra games on those previous seasons. Of course, they've got a better squad than they had in previous seasons, and they've developed along the way. But again, I struggle to be too harsh on Alguacil and Real Sociedad for the moment. We'll dig into the numbers in a bit to try and explain why. But yeah, initial feeling is that they're not playing fluently. It's not humming. They're nowhere near their best level. But I don't think there's a drastic drop off, and they've been a bit unlucky recently, I would say.
I'd say there is some nuance to this. I'd say it's a par overall, but at the same time, there are some concerning aspects. But then at the same time, that group stage in the Champions League was far better than anyone probably could have expected. So in terms of the Copa del Rey elimination by Mallorca, that's a penalty shootout, which is basically a penalty shootout. And Mallorca have proven now that they're a proper handful for any team. That they've been much improved recently under Javier Aguirre. So there's that. You look at it, they were eliminated in the semi-final of the Copa del Rey by Mallorca. Okay. They were eliminated by PSG in the last 16 of the Champions League. Okay. How were they eliminated? The second leg was pretty convincing by PSG, but that first leg could have gone either way. Now, in the league, they're 10 points behind Athletic Club, and that is disappointing. But like you said, it's a few wins, but at the same time, you would be hoping that they'd be pushing a little bit further up the table there. And if it wasn't for Girona's, I guess Girona and Athletic Club being exceptional this year has painted that in a kind of a slightly different light. So, like, maybe that's something to consider here too. But being 10 points behind Athletic Club in fifth, I would say is disappointing for sure.
Yeah, it's for me, obviously Athletic and Girona have not been in European competition this season, which they will hope to be next season. I don't know what you think, but I think if those two sides are in Europe next season, they will finish lower than they have this season, for the mere fact of the accumulation of games, the fact that your squad gets tested a lot more. I think if Athletic had to play in the Champions League this season, it wouldn't surprise me if the two teams were, you know, would have swapped positions this season, to be honest. I just think, and like you said, their group stage was arguably the best in the Champions League this season. I can't remember the exact state of play across all the groups, but they were sensational and pushed into the limit twice. I think they deserve to beat them at Reale Arena, and Inter are probably one of the best, I don't know, 3-4 teams in Europe at present. So again, they were unlucky to run into PSG in the first knockout stage round.
Yeah, that's another thing.
If they'd have got a weaker draw, then we could be sitting here talking about a team that are among the last, you know, eight sides in Europe. So a bit unfortunate there. I think we have to praise the group stage more than we should, knock marks off for being eliminated by PSG.
Yeah, and you pulled up here their record after 28 games since Alguacil's first season in charge, which was 2019-20. Their points going back to 2019-20, they're 47 points that first season, 45, 47, 51 last season they had after 28 games, and this season they have 43, so they're 8 points worse off than they were last season. But that is... you can explain that away with the Champions League. And again, a really tough group that could have, that you could flip that upside down. Maybe not Salzburg, but you could flip Benfica, Inter, Real Sociedad, and that could have been, that it could finish like that, you know? And they finished top of that group, and then they got a really tough draw on PSG. So yeah, you can explain that away a little bit. So do you want to just talk about their, what has been mentioned as their annual drop-off under Alguacil? Is it a thing, or is it missing some context? Is it based on the style of play, the lack of the squad options, or the fall-off from plan A to plan B?
Yeah, there's a lot of factors in it, but if we look across his full seasons in charge of Real Sociedad, their win percentage in the early parts of the season, so we're talking September, October, has generally been a lot higher than it has once they get to the other side of Christmas. So the worst months are generally February, March time, and those are the numbers in themselves. A lot of people talk about the second half of the season collapse under Alguacil. I'm not sure collapse is the best word. It feels a bit strong. There's a dip, but again, I'd have to look across a number of teams and see how their win percentage tends to drift across the season, because obviously you would expect teams to be at their best when they're fresher. But it feels like it's really true for Real Sociedad, given the way that they play, the emphasis that Alguacil puts on winning duels, on playing a very man-to-man style at times, where it's, you know, you've got your 1v1 duel against a specific opposition player, and they kind of try to impose themselves by just stacking up those individual wins all across the pitch. And yeah, you add the accumulation of games and the fact they've got a pretty small squad. We've spoken about it before, the fact that they rely a lot on the youth players to make up the numbers. More so than other sides who are involved in European competition. So there's lots of factors to point towards. And the numbers do say that the win percentage drops off. But again, we've also ran the numbers for this run of 2 wins in 11 games. And we don't want to put everything on expected goals. It doesn't explain everything. But I think it does show that there's not a huge drop off in quality of performance. So they're not shedding chances. The shots and the chances that they're giving up tend to be quite steady across the board. So I'll see if you agree with me, but I think there's been games recently where they've conceded more than they've deserved to on the balance of play, and there's not been huge structural issues.
No, and I think that a lot of it comes down again to that attritional nature that they play with, and you can't kind of have that style and laud them for it at the start of the season and then complain about a fall off when A, their status as not giants of the transfer market of financial in terms of finances doesn't allow them to build a squad that would would mitigate that. So, yeah, it's very concentrated, their attack. Oyer, Sabal, Marino, Bryce and Kubo are all in double digits in goals and assists. And then after that, nobody else is even near 10. Ander Barnechea is on 6 in all, that's in all competitions, 6 goals and assists. And then you've got Martin Zubimendi on 5. And obviously Kubo left in the middle of the season to international duty. And then you've got Mikel Merino, who's on 11 goals and assists. He's got 397 duels in La Liga this season, which is second behind only Chris Ramos with ridiculous 477. So it's impossible, I think, to keep that up while maintaining that threat going forward. And Merino and Bryce are central to how they play. You take Kubo out of that, like we saw against Granada at the weekend, and they don't have a replacement for Kubo. Turrientes played there at the weekend and he drifts inside and picks up more central positions. So you take Kubo out, and we were talking at the start of the season about how Traore and Kubo was going to be an incredible combination on the right hand side, and it is. And but at the same time, once you take Kubo out, they've no one there to replace that, keeping the wit on the right hand side, who links well with Traore. And there was a couple of times against Granada where Traore would start to run forward and he had no reference point on that wider on the right hand side, so he just kind of turned back and pass it backwards, so it takes that away from it. And yeah, like I said, in terms of the defense, they've been solid all year. There's no real problem there. Tierney, Galan and Traore have all contributed. Tierney has suffered with some injuries, but the full back problem is somewhat sorted. Odriozola unlucky with injuries. Then you've got Zubeldia and Lenormand, fine. Alex Ramiro, fine. And John Pacheco coming in when necessary, also a fine backup. So the defense is fine. It's in midfield where they need they need fresh legs around this time of the season to come in for Mikel Merino, who can, you're not going to find a guy who does all of what Merino does, but at least pick up some of the slack so that then Bryce doesn't have to sacrifice his game, and so that Zubimendi doesn't get cut out as much, which I've kind of noticed in recent weeks too. So yeah, I think it's just a squad issue, the nature of the way that they play and their inability then to build a squad that is going to maintain their competitiveness when the tough times hit. Because just finally, they are a club that has a very strong development system, a really strong B team, and a lot of the younger players are coming through, but they're not battle tested. And the likes of Torrientes, excellent, Desarate, players like that who are coming through, but they're just not ready yet and they need more minutes.
Yeah, and you could probably say, well, I think Alguacil can be guilty at times of not giving those younger players the chance to play regularly. He will put them in, obviously, because they rely on those players for the outer edges of their squad. But someone like Torrientes, they've taken a while to really bring him into the fold. And I as you'll know, I've been speaking about him for a while now. I think he's one of the best Spanish midfield prospects of his age in the country, but he hasn't played up until recently. He's not played anywhere near as much as others have. And I think Alguacil has put that down to, like you said, he's not battle tested yet. He's not an absolute guarantee without the ball. But again, I think until you actually put him in the fire and let him, you know, figure those things out, is he going to get there enough to convince you to back this guy going forward? And I think we should probably speak about Torrientes now. He was a guy I put in the notes for the show for somebody to focus on, because it wasn't official, but for me, I don't know what you thought, I thought he was their best player against Granada at the weekend. And he came into a team which is obviously in a difficult moment, probably looking for some different solutions in the team, and he stood up excellently, showed bravery on the ball, showed his talent on the ball, which has never really been in question for me. But seems to be translating more into senior games now. So, yeah, what do you think of Torrientes at the weekend and just in general?
Yeah, I agree. I thought he was excellent, and I thought that he picked up slightly different positions than Kubo normally would. And I do think that it might take maybe the fact that now there is less pressure. They're out of the Copa. They're out of the Champions League. They're basically fighting for that sixth spot, and Real Betis are behind them by a point. You got Valencia kind of breathing down their neck, but at the same time, it's not a race for top four. It's not the be all and end all for them. So maybe they will get a chance now to play Torrientes in his natural position, because that's the way he was coming inside against Granada, kind of occupying that place where he wants to play. But Zubimendi was there, and a big part of Alguacil doesn't tend to alter his tactics very much, and he doesn't. So Torrientes, do you think it has to be an either or with Zubimendi, or can he play with Zubimendi?
No, I think they can play together for sure. It's just he's gone back to the diamond in the last two league games. I don't know whether that's purely because Kubo has not been playing and Baranache is unavailable. Obviously, they played 4-3-3 for the most of the season. But obviously, four midfielders is a way to get Torrientes into the team. We'll see if he sticks with it during this final stretch. But again, if as we presume, Real Sociedad are going to miss out on Champions League football this season, Zubimendi is going to be not in the shop window, but obviously teams are interested in him. If something comes to pass, say, I don't know, Arsenal and Arteta come after him strongly in the summer, Torrientes is a guy who can play as the deepest midfielder. Obviously, he's a different profile to Zubimendi, but he played there in the B team under Alonso. He's got a lot more craft to his game in possession, I think, than Zubimendi. I don't know if that's a hot take, but I see what Torrientes can do on the ball in a better light than what Zubimendi has shown so far. Obviously, Zubimendi has a much bigger upper hand out of possession, but again, if Zubimendi goes, Real Sociedad cannot replace him like for like. So I think now is a good time in general to bring Torrientes into the team on a more permanent basis, because I think firstly, his performances deserve it. He's shown that he can be at the level when he's been called upon this side of Christmas. And again, he can occupy the two positions as interior or pivote. And I think, to me, obviously I've been on the Torrientes bandwagon for a long time, but to me, I think Alguacil should back him now, because even if it's not perfect now, in 12 to 18 months, I think he would be a player that Real Sociedad could never afford if they went to the transfer market and wanted to buy a technically gifted midfielder who has, you know, he's got great range of pass, intelligence, good vision of play. I just think now's the time to really get behind him, because you'll be rewarded further down the line.
Quite a statement there. He's gotten Jamie Kemp's A-rated stamp of approval, which is only really saved for the creme de la creme of the likes of Kieran Rodriguez and players like that. So, keep an eye on Torrientes. Jamie is very rarely wrong when he's this adamant about something. So, yeah, Torrientes.
He'll be on the bench next week.
yeah. Loaned out to Mirandés next season. But, then just finally in attack, Andre Silva hasn't really added much. I'd say they're wondering now what to do with Umar Sadiq. He tore his ACL, which has kind of been mentioned. You kind of say that after saying his name all the time, but that was last year. Like he's gotten plenty. He's played 1,300 minutes this season, 4 goals plus assists. Andre Silva, 3 goals plus assists in 861 minutes, and then Arsene Zakarian has 1 goal and assist, and that he's 20. It's his first season in Spanish football, so I would give him a break on that. And I guess this is the nature of their status again as a club that can't go out to the market and spend 80, 90 million on a player. So you get, you take kind of mediocre size swings on players who you can recover, like Martin Odegaard, like a Kubo, players who had kind of lost their way. You bring them in, it's a really stable environment where they can play minutes and they're allowed to play, they're allowed to flourish. And we've seen that with Kubo, Odegaard, Isak then flipped to Newcastle for, I can't remember exactly, but I think it was 60 million.
Yeah. Yeah, 60, 70,
something like that. And then they replaced him with Sadiq for 20 million. So, like, and then you go again and you start again. And they brought in Ali Cho, didn't work. Sadiq hasn't worked yet. He's still only 25 and has time. Zakarian, still young, has time, but that hasn't worked. I think it's safe to say that. Then on the flip side of that, Bryce Mendes has also worked at just 14 million. Isak worked not that he was a restoration project, but he definitely worked. And now Kubo and the likes. Anyway, in terms of their attack, they're going to have to do something. And I would say when you said they've gone back to the diamond, that getting four midfielders in, part of that also is another way to alter their attack so that they can get more chances for Sadiq, because he needs a few now at this stage to finish one, and he can finish, but it just feels like he's gone completely off the boil too.
Yeah, I just don't know what to do with Sadiq now. When I watch him, he scored against Granada with a nice header, but his general play is just, I find him quite a jarring effect on the team's player, to be honest. If I was playing alongside him, I'm not really sure I'd be too thrilled about it, because he's just so hard to predict. Obviously, his best, that's a good thing. It's unpredictable for the opponents, but when he's in one of these stretches of form where things aren't really coming off him, I feel like he just holds the ball too long. He ends up running down dead ends, never seems to play first time and just keep the ball moving. It feels like he wants to always do something impressive when he gets the ball at his feet to try and show that he's a talented player and he's contributing. But I feel like he just needs to totally simplify his game and try and recover some form that way.
Yeah, there was a couple of counterattacks that broke down. He was in too much of a hurry, it felt like. And yeah, like you said there, it can be frustrating watching him playing. Against Mallorca, he puts one or two of those chances away in the first leg, I think it was, where he had a good few, and it was it's a completely different game. But yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see what they do in the summer, how much they lean into Torrientes, and whether or not the big boys come for Zubimendi. Like, say, Xabi Alonso gets the Liverpool job. I don't know if Liverpool need midfielders, but Xabi Alonso, obviously, rich history there with Real Sociedad. He's the kind of player who Xabi Alonso would love at the base of midfield. So, yeah, you got Arsenal have been linked, I think, with him even in the past. So, yeah, we'll see how that one works out. So, all in all, Jamie, you think that this whole narrative of Real Sociedad's late season collapse is complete and utter nonsense?
No, I just think that the time to worry about Real Sociedad and Alguacil would be if how they finish this season. Now they're only one competition, I would expect them to really go after that sixth spot. Now I'd give them the advantage over Betis, or at least I'd expect them to finish above Betis from here. It's one of those things with Alguacil. I feel like their absolute top-end performances and their absolute worst performances, the gap between those is smaller than it is for other teams, I would say, at the top end of La Liga. When they're absolutely humming, they don't tend to blow teams away. When they're at their worst, they don't tend to roll over. I mean, I would say even Atletico Madrid under Simeone have worse defeats in general than Alguacil's Real Sociedad tend to suffer. So I think we need to value the fact that they've got just a very steady base of performance where they never dip too low. Obviously, it's two wins from their last 11, but again, I don't think there's been major problems defending. I don't see it with the eye test or in the numbers. I feel like they're a dependable team who are just suffering a bit to put their chances away, and they've gone through a spell where they've conceded, I think, more than they deserve to. So again, we'll worry if they are not picking up in the next few months, but for me, I'm not worried for now.
I wouldn't say they're too worried with their run of fixtures before April 28th, the weekend of April 28th. So they play Cadiz, Alaves, Almeria, and Getafe in the next four games. 12 points out of 12 there, Jamie, yeah? Let's just say.
If they start to re-enter, it's a guaranteed 12.
It's a guarantee. From there, they finish the season playing Real Madrid, Las Palmas, Barcelona, Valencia, Betis, and Atletico Madrid. You can't get a more difficult, unless you throw Girona in there, an athletic club, a Basque derby into the mix there. It could get more difficult, but yeah, that's a gauntlet there to finish the season. But yeah, let's see how it works out. Alguacil, obviously, loads of credit in the bank, so this isn't even a discussion about that. But it is interesting to think and to watch them now that they're out of all those competitions. The spotlight isn't really on them anymore. The pressure's off, and they have time now to readjust, play their best 11, give chances to some of the younger lads, like significant minutes to some of the younger lads, and let's see how they finish the season. We'll reassess this in the summer.
Sounds good. Yeah, spot on.
So yeah, we're gonna log off here and finish the pod and go and look at all the fallout from the Rafa Benitez news, along with trying to figure out who's going to take over Zaragoza, who's going to take over Espanyol, and whether or not Almeria decide to take the plunge and sack another manager this season. So yeah, from us here at La Pausa Pod, it's adios.